Welcome to Best Bets, the Sandringham Research School podcast. This podcast aims to provide you with the latest education research and insights about how evidence can be used to benefit students in your school. Although education research can never tell us exactly what to do within the classroom, it can provide us with best bets, tried and tested approaches that the evidence suggests may lead to promising outcomes. In each episode, we'll draw upon the experience of a researcher or teacher with a particular expertise in the area we're looking at. And a little bit about us. Sandringham is a Hertfordshire secondary school and has been designated as a research school by the Education Endowment Foundation. You can follow us on Twitter at SandResearch. Welcome to episode 5 of Best Bets, which features my wonderful colleagues Kate Mountsey and Karen Roskilly from the Sandringham Research School team. Kate Mountsey is a research lead at Sandringham and head of sixth form. Kate previously worked at the University of Hertfordshire on CPD programmes for teachers and has been a head of geography. Kate has an interest in memory, effective study habits and metacognition. Karen Roskilly is a research lead at Sandringham and director of learning for sociology. Karen previously immersed herself in all things pastoral as a head of year before moving into a teaching and learning role as an advanced lead teacher. Karen also has an interest in metacognition as well as the evidence around effective feedback. And I am Caroline Creeby, Director of the Research School and Deputy Head Teacher here at Sandringham, and latterly host of this podcast, Best Bets. Hi, Kate and Karen. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me today to record our podcast on your experiences of remote learning.
Hi. Hiya.
Super. So to kick us all off, tell me briefly about how you found the transition to remote teaching. So maybe Karen, if you could start with that.
Of course. Oh, my. Well, lockdown one, I think, was utterly terrifying. I was worried about the technology. I was utterly out of my comfort zone in terms of remote teaching. And the whole thing to start with worried me no end. I think luckily we did have a bit of warning that schools were about to close. So I did do a bit of a practice dry run using Google Classroom with year 12 before we shut. So we at least knew how to kind of log on and access Google Meet. But I think those of you who know me know that I'm not great with technology. So this was a really, really steep learning curve. And I think it got better during that first lockdown, and I did become more confident using Google Meet, for example, and Google Classroom. And certainly this time round, in this lockdown, I have felt more confident about remote teaching. I have even tried new things, which I definitely didn't do first time round.
Brilliant. Well, that sounds great. So it's so interesting, isn't it, how that period last March, I think, was in many ways terrifying for us all, but actually really put in the groundwork that perhaps we're really benefiting from this time round.
Yeah, but I think it absolutely has for me. I felt I had all the basics kind of sorted and I knew what I was doing from that respect, which has then, as I said, kind of enabled me to be a little bit more confident with what I'm doing and to have the confidence then to use new tools and to try out new things, which I wouldn't have done at all during lockdown one.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. And Kate, what's been your experience of that transition to remote teaching?
Oh, yes, very similar to Karen. I think in the first lockdown, I had to make peace with myself really after a couple of weeks and think, I'm just going to do the simple things. I'll get hold of Google Meets. I'll make sure everyone's on there. I'll be nice to them. I'll teach the content and I'll continue using Google Classroom, but sort of left it at that, really. I know a lot of other colleagues were racing ahead with other things, but certainly lockdown two, like Karen, I've made significant progress with the help of colleagues with other tools, which has been really nice, and perhaps talk about that a bit later.
Super. Well, thanks for those insights. They're really, really helpful. I wouldn't mind just focusing more about the sort of mode of delivery.
So because you've most mentioned Google Meet, which is used quite a lot in our context, and it sort of lends itself to really think about this debate about live lessons or not live lessons, or sometimes we hear it described as synchronous and asynchronous. And there's certainly a lot of support in some quarters for live lessons, but the research evidence from the EEF and Ofsted at least seems to suggest there isn't overwhelming evidence in favour of either approach. And I think when you do read between the lines, as we're always challenged to as a research school, there isn't actually a depth of evidence to kind of point us either way. And as ever, obviously, you know, we're directed really to the quality of teaching and how that is really important. So explanation, scaffolding, feedback, for example, that really make the difference. But as a teacher and as people that are getting used to teaching remotely, what's your experience about live or not live, and what is your preference and why? So maybe Kate, do you want to start us off on that one?
Yes, so we have taught live really from day one of the first lockdown, and we're very fortunate at Sandringham to have a policy of bring your own device, which meant we were very well placed for that. And that, of course, was put in place without any knowledge of what was coming in the future. So all of our students, including disadvantaged, were catered for before we went on lockdown. I do prefer live, and for the simple reason that I think it fosters the relationship with the students, which I think is at the absolute heart of remote learning as well as live sort of normal teaching. So that engagement and that relationship, I think, you know, you can monitor that they're there. Even if you then set tasks which don't have to be live, and in fact, sometimes are probably better not live if you want to reduce some screen time, just that check-in and that live experience, I think, for us has been highly beneficial. So for me, I think live, but certainly use of more and more tools to post materials and recap stuff non-live is probably where I'm at the moment.
Okay, thanks, Kate. And what's your view, Karen?
Really similar to Kate's, actually. And I have only taught live lessons. And that doesn't mean that it's me putting on a performance, you know, full on for an hour each lesson. God, that would be awful. But exactly as Kate was saying, I think the students really appreciate knowing that you're there. And it gives them a very, very clear routine. They know they need to, you know, sign into Google Meet at their normal lesson times. And, you know, you can then do your kind of live explanation. You're there to answer any questions that they've got immediately. And exactly as Kate said, you know, you can then set tasks which they can be getting on with. And I found that it's quite useful for just me to be there in the background. I can be doing other bits and pieces while they're getting on with the task. And they know that I'm there and can ask me questions if they need to. And I think I found, certainly with the live lessons, that it's kind of enabled me to keep the same routines that I would normally have in my classroom. And I think I found that quite beneficial from, you know, a keeping sane point of view. And I think students have found that quite beneficial as well. So, you know, our lessons follow the same flow that they would do if we were in school. You know, we start with our quick quiz. We have our, you know, explanation and discussion about the homework. You know, feedback and those activities work in the same way as far as possible. And I think that has kept us really on track.
Super, that's fantastic. I think just picking up on that, if you don't mind, I think the themes of what you've both talked about is really that routine and trying where possible to replicate that in this remote world that we're all teaching in at the moment. If you wouldn't mind commenting on just within that live delivery, maybe just one tool each that's been useful to help you kind of replicate that routine. So I know that you've mentioned Google Meet, where obviously you can speak to the students directly, you can project your screen, you can talk through explanations. I suppose if you were to identify one other tool that you found useful, what might you pick?
For me, probably Google Forms, like in quick quizzing at the start of a lesson live. And I'm getting that live feedback, and I can immediately address misconceptions or concerns.
Fantastic. Yeah.
I suppose for me it is similar. I don't use Google Forms, but we do a quick quiz at the start of each lesson in the same format as we would, you know, normally do within class, with, you know, students giving me their answers and us talking about it. I think also I found Google Assignments really useful in terms of students handing their work into me and me being able to give them feedback on that. And then the fact that we are, you know, live in a Google Meet lesson, they're then still able to interact with me and talk to me about the feedback they've received and kind of check their understanding of it much in the same way as they would in the classroom.
That's fantastic. Thank you. And certainly both of those tools are just so useful to get that overview of all the students, as you know, obviously with Google Forms, you know, if all students are doing it, you can really get a sense of the whole class straight away. And likewise, I think the assignments tool, it's really helpful from a workflow perspective.
Yeah,
that's all students are working on, that it all comes into you in one central place. You can go forward, back, check different students, give feedback, etc. Thank you for those recommendations there. They're really helpful. Just changing the sort of topic slightly and just going back to the evidence base, peer interactions are highlighted by the EEF as important for student learning and for their motivation. What's your experience of peer interactions in lessons?
Okay, I have to say that during lockdown one, my experience of this was very, very limited. It was just getting through the whole situation was a priority. And whilst, you know, I was very aware that the research, you know, shows how important this is for student learning, it wasn't high on my priority list. But again, this time round, you know, with that kind of growing confidence that we were talking about earlier, I have entered the wonderful world of Google Meet breakout rooms. and many thanks to kind of our colleague Emma Beaton for her kind of training session on that and kind of giving me the confidence to try it out. And I have been using it with some success with year 12, in particular my personal development class. And I have to say, the first time that I used them with that class, it wasn't an overwhelming success. You know, the mechanisms did all work, but they were lacking in confidence about, you know, how to go about, you know, using it effectively. And it did take a little bit of training, and the second time and the third time, you know, have been significantly better, and it has worked far better than that first time. So I think, you know, if you are trying these things in terms of breakout rooms, then give it a chance. You know, the students do get better with practice. At least that's certainly what I've found with mine.
Thank you. And Kate, how about you? Have you had have you attempted to support student interactions in lessons?
Yes, so similarly, I've gone for the breakout rooms. Again, lots of teething problems. They're just not confident even in small groups sometimes, and I find different classes react really differently as well. What I found in the last couple of weeks, if I go for groups of three, not even four or five, they tend to talk more and give them a really concrete task to work on together, which is possibly an obvious statement, but something manageable, nice bit of challenge, perhaps on a Google Doc to collaborate. It really focuses them. They have to talk it through. And some of them, so you obviously can go into those groups, which is fascinating, and they know that. But we've had them showing their dogs off to each other, having a nice chat about what they're having for lunch. And I'm all in favour of that. These poor children.
Absolutely.
You know, for me, that was brilliant. I actually love that bit of it because I'm just talking at the screen a lot of the time. I was like, I can't keep doing this. So absolutely, it's been a bit of a revelation for me. And the other thing is Pear Deck. You can find a lot about that online, and I think we're putting some materials out from the EdTech Demonstrator School as well as our own webinars this coming week. So Pear Deck is quite hard to get head around, but as I said, I'm not a great one at technology, and I've just about managed it again with help from a colleague. So worth looking into that, and as I'm sure other things as well. But certainly, having been scared about it in terms of the tools, I'm now feel like we've made a bit of a breakthrough in that, which has been really good.
I think a bit of a theme that's sort of emerging from your insights in the questions so far is confidence, and confidence of not just teachers but students as well. And I think there's I suppose a bit of to draw on Sweller, there is the cognitive load challenge. And I think, and really in this respect, I don't even mean the student.
No.
I mean actually as a teacher, like delivering, where you're thinking about the content of your curriculum and what needs to be covered and the tricky issues that you'll need to communicate and whether your assessment questions are good and, you know, that part of it. But then in the delivery, then it's right, I've got these tabs open, okay, that I must open the breakout room. And then it's kind of that planning to actually navigate the students and ourselves through the lesson, I think is quite challenging at first. And I think in particular when getting used to new tools, and I think everything you've said totally resonates with me. And then it's after a few sessions, then you kind of get used to it. And then, you know, that guidance you're giving there, Kate, about, and I know you sort of said it was perhaps a bit straightforward, but giving concrete tasks in breakout rooms or actually groups of three does seem to be better than groups of four, because, you know, students need to build up their confidence of talking online and using these tools as well. And I think that is a bit of a thread emerging, not just from you two, but I think also just more generally as we learn to do this in a totally different way, really.
Yeah.
So thank you for those insights. They're really helpful. I suppose related actually to, I suppose, peer interactions, but more moving now to particular students and engagement more generally. You know, obviously schools play such a critical role in engaging students with their learning in a more of a holistic sense. And I'm not just thinking about specific lesson activities or Q&A, etc., but rather how we support them to engage at all and to attend. What's been your experience of supporting students who are really struggling to attend at all or to engage with much of their learning? And perhaps Kate, if you wouldn't mind starting off on that one.
Yes, so from my personal experience, I'm the head of sick form, so there's a certain age group I'm supporting here. It's just intensive, there's no way around it. So we have a very clear tracking, like Google Sheet across the school here with every student listed, and teachers will report on there who has not attended or not submitted work. And at the end of each day, really, the heads of year and other staff are looking at that to pick up any patterns and the students that are struggling, and then they get onto it. So heads of year are obviously key, but we do also engage with our tutors. And they're doing a great job on following up individuals. And obviously we're contacting parents. So there is no shortcut. And it's just this constant view and maintenance of this tracker to keep a view on it. We've done things like bring some students in who are vulnerable and not managing to engage. And we're supporting their learning in school, obviously up to a point where we can manage. And again, I'll just go back to that relationship. It's all about the relationship between the teacher or the school and the parents and the students. And that is even more important in remote learning. Well, it's always important, but we just got to get them engaged and talk to them about what's preventing them really from doing that. So no shortcuts, but utilising as many key staff as possible.
Thank you, Kate. Karen, would you have anything to add to that in your role as a teacher, a tutor, etc.?
I just think more generally that students really appreciate you noticing if they're not quite right, you know, if their motivation is a little bit off or they're not quite as actively involved in lessons. And I know there have been a few occasions where I've just dropped an email to a student just to say, just notice that you know, you weren't as involved in the lesson today as normal. Is everything okay? And you know, that works really well, exactly as Kate was saying, in terms of building those relationships, but also then kind of giving students an opportunity to talk to you just in case, you know, there is anything wrong, and kind of giving them that way in, I think, really, to get, engage with us in school.
I think that's so powerful. And thank you for those reflections. I think possibly, obviously, depending on where we get our news and media from, I think a lot of the rhetoric and debate around remote learning really does centre on, are we doing live or not? Like, well, certainly I've seen the debate being dominated really by that theme. And actually so much of the work that goes on to support students learning is outside of the lesson as much as inside the lesson.
Yeah.
And, you know, that noticing, the emails, the phone calls, etc. And really, you know, well, I don't know, it's a bit of a bold statement, but you can have obviously seamless, fantastic technology to replicate as far as possible what a, dare I say it in inverted commas, a normal lesson would feel like, but without that pastoral support and engagement from teachers and support staff to help all students, then the learning in the lessons wouldn't be paying dividends. The learning perhaps wouldn't be taking place for all students that we might want. So I think it's perhaps, I don't know, in the debate and the research literature, not as much attention is perhaps paid to that, but well, anyway, but I think in our experience, I think that's critical to learning.
Yeah.
So just moving on a little bit, thinking about your new ways of working, and you've really kindly shared kind of the, you know, the ins and outs and the experiences that you've had of trying new tools and almost that emotional journey that you've been on in, you know, learning how to do it, things going wrong and building confidence, etc. I know it perhaps might be some weeks before we're back in the classroom, but are there practices that you think you're going to continue using that you've learned in the previous months that you might then bring back into your practice when we're face to face again?
Okay, so for me, it's definitely marking online. I've always been kind of the queen of a purple pen and having, you know, students writing in front of me and being able to scribble on it and mark on it. But actually, lockdown one showed me a whole new way of approaching this. And we've been using Microsoft Lens for them to turn their written work into one PDF for me that they're then uploading to Google Classroom assignments. And I'm then able to annotate that work in exactly the same way I would as if I was handwriting on it, and also give them overall comments. So for me, that's been a winner.
And just does that sort of, from kind of a, obviously the quality of the feedback I imagine you're providing is equivalent, yeah, but does that save you time? Is it more convenient? Is it, can you dip in and out a bit more effectively compared to paper?
I think it has kind of strengths and weaknesses in that, you know, on paper, I've always been able to cut my marking around wherever I need to, you know, watching my daughter do gymnastics, swimming, all of those kinds of things. So it doesn't have quite the flexibility, but certainly I think I find it more time efficient in that you can build up a bank of comments within Google that you can then reuse. You know, we all find ourselves saying the same thing over and over again on bits of work, and this kind of, you know, takes the time out of that. So I think that the quality of the feedback I'm giving is equally as good, and perhaps I can do the feedback slightly more quickly. It just doesn't have quite the flexibility in terms of where I can do my marking.
Sure, I see. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Karen. And how about you, Kate? Will there be practices you would bring into your normal practice when we're back?
Yes, I think for me it's around the area of formative assessment, and just getting a better handle on exactly what's in students' minds rather than me assuming a lot's happening. So I would be using obviously the Google Forms I really like, and I did continue that after lockdown one very regularly. Also Google assignments and just quick tasks, so an elaboration task in a lesson for 5 or 10 minutes gives me a really good view on a key concept, whether they understand it or not. And I also really like the Moat add-on with the verbal feedback on Google assignments. I've discovered that in the last few weeks, and I think it's brilliant. So it's saved me loads of time, and I think the feedback is just as good, can be more. So certainly look to incorporate that. And finally, outside of my core teaching, I think Google Meets will go on very usefully for example, employer talks and university talks. So we're running a few Google Meets next half term with experts or with alumni in different areas like medicine and law. And it's just really easy for these people, whoever they are, to log on at 4 o'clock. I've got 30 sixth form students in there hearing some amazing things. And that was, I think that's a brilliant idea. And to think we didn't really know what Google Meet was a year ago, I think that will be transformative for aspiration and for getting a lot of outside contact into our school as well.
Yeah, I've got no doubt. That's so impressive. And it, you know, I think, again, so we often think about remote learning, we're thinking about individual, you know, specific lessons and lesson delivery, which obviously is our core business, but these wider, such important aspects of school life. And, you know, we could go on about parents' evenings and other things, and how I think there probably will be some key changes in the delivery of different routines and practices in schools as a result. Oh, it's absolutely fascinating. Well, thank you for all your insights so far. Honestly, just so valuable. And I just know listeners are going to be like nodding along and just, you know, it's really interesting to hear your kind of personal close-up journey during this process. And just before we end, though, I did wonder if you had any kind of personal highlight about your experience of remote teaching that you wouldn't mind sharing before we sign off today.
Yes, so I guess for me, it's really, well, forced me in a way to get a hold of this technology and some new ways of teaching, which, as we've just mentioned, we'll bring into our everyday teaching. I'd always been interested, but I could not find the time at all to prioritise it. So it's really helped me after sort of 20 years of teaching to really beef up some great tools that you know, really embedded in good pedagogy, as long as we use them properly. Secondly, I'd say it has even developed relationships with students, because they're so appreciative of what we're trying to do. And, you know, we're having these interactions online, and they've came back after the first lockdown, and I'm sure after this one. It's just moved our relationship on, and I think that's lovely, really.
Well, that's great to hear. Thank you, Kate.
I mean,
how about you,
Karen? As ever, I completely agree with Kate, everything she says. Yeah. But there was one particular moment, actually, and it was this lockdown, so a couple of weeks ago now, where inevitably my Wi-Fi cut out and I got booted out of Google Meet. And when I managed to kind of log back in, you know, 4 or 5 minutes later, one of my students has taken over the lesson and is kindly talking through my PowerPoint for me with the class. And I just thought, ah, absolutely amazing. Thank you and well done.
That is just one of those golden moments in teaching that could make
it was golden.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, that's fantastic. And what a nice note to end on. So again, thank you so much to both of you for just being really honest. And it's so interesting, I think, being at that interface of obviously being in the research school team. You know, we're well aware of the evidence, and it's really just that point of how it translates to the real classroom. And it's going to be an area ripe for further research, I think. Really fascinating. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to episode 5 of Best Bets. To follow up on the ideas and references mentioned by me, Kate and Karen, head over to our website, researchschool.org.uk/Sandringham. If you enjoyed this episode, please do rate us and write a short review if you have time. Ratings and reviews allow others to see the podcast when they're browsing. Do also subscribe to the Best Bets podcast, and you'll get the next episode automatically through your podcast app.